really don't want to be scaring you here on Looking at Lyme. I want you to be informed. The point is not to keep people from going outside. It's quite the opposite. It's about being careful, taking precautions. That's the key. It's called risk management, and on this Looking at Lyme, we're going to meet an expert on managing risks. I'm hoping that all of you teachers, counselors, and guides are listening to this podcast. Now, anyone who knows me knows that I am really into risk management. Pretty much everything I do in life, I am always scanning the horizon, trying to figure out what could potentially harm me. And I probably got this from taking care of other people's children. When we take people into the outdoors as a guide or as a teacher, we have an extra duty of care to take care of those children who aren't ours. On this Looking at Lyme podcast, we're going to speak with Steve Smith from Experiential Consulting. He is an expert in risk management. We reached him in Washington State. Thanks so much for joining our podcast today. I'm just going to dive right in and ask you, what is risk management?
Well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here with you all. So what is risk management? So that's a term that actually comes to us originally from the financial world, and it has been adopted by outdoor education and outdoor recreation programs. It is important to distinguish when we're talking about this term that safety is a term that we often use, but risk management is a much more nuanced and, to me, a more appropriate term. They're easily conflated. But if you look up safety, what you're going to find is free from risk of harm. So let me ask you, how can we take people backpacking or hiking or paddling or even driving vehicles to these trailheads to do those activities and expect them to be free from risk of harm? So it's not about eliminating the risk altogether. It's about managing that risk, which is why we talk about risk management. So there's another little angle to it, too, that I'd like to share with you, and it's another rhetorical question. Is risk a bad thing that we're seeking to completely eliminate altogether from our lives or from these outdoor adventures? Of course not. There's a value in being in these wild and remote places and being out of your comfort zone and learning new things and making mistakes, right, and experientially learning from those mistakes. Learning to trust your partners, taking social and emotional risks, things like that. So outdoor education gets us out of our comfort zones and more into learning zones. There's a story about Kurt Hahn, who is the fellow who founded Outward Bound back in the day. And he ran a school in Wales that tried to educate the whole student. So he famously, this was a novel, you know, unique idea at the time, and he famously impelled the scholar onto the athletic field and sent the athletes into the classrooms, trying to get them out of their comfort zones and working on the less developed parts of themselves. So, you know, going out and being out of our comfort zones and being in those wild places, these are risks that are really just inherent to outdoor education. And in my company, we encourage programs to think about the beneficial risks, the positive risks that people get from being outside, in addition, of course, to those undesired risks. Our society overprotects kids, and it's not to their advantage. So anyway, that's a quick summary for you of some of the thoughts about risk management, how we think about it.
I really love that historical context, and you and I certainly share a similar passion for outdoor experiential education and all the life lessons that can transfer into our everyday lives. I'm just curious about when we apply that extra layer of risk management into taking care of young people, when we have that duty of care for young people, and if that adds one other layer of complexity.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, I talked about a lot of the benefits that come from outdoor education and all that, but working with other people's children carries a tremendous responsibility. And focusing back on Lyme disease for a second, there are no beneficial risks to getting Lyme disease. There's nothing positive, you know, that you're going to gain from that. So, you know, being seriously injured or contracting a very serious disease like Lyme disease or being in an accident of some sort, you know, these are all things that we really want to accurately assess and have good risk management strategies and plans for those instances. Even the very best program can still have something unexpected happen in the dynamic outdoor environments that we work. And so, you know, it's not just about preventing these things from happening, but it's also about having the appropriate plans and systems in place to be able to effectively respond, you know, when unexpected things do happen. So, yes, we definitely have a big responsibility in taking care of all of our people when we're on these adventures. And the younger they are, you know, the more the responsibility shifts from the participant to the leaders or to the program itself.
So in your role, how do you help organizations like outdoor schools and camps manage their risk? Is it by creating new protocols?
Yeah, you know, policies and protocols is one part of it, but there's so many other layers. I know if you look at outdoor education through a systems lens, you know, the policies and the procedures that you follow are really just one part of a much larger system of things that start long before the program even goes into the field. And one of my mentors in outdoor risk management is an attorney, recreation law attorney named Charles Reb Gregg, and he introduced me to a really simple model that he has taught over the years called Analyze, Manage, Inform. And let me just break down those three steps real quick. Analyzing the hazards and the risks of an outdoor program is really the first step. And a lot of organizations like to use a simple model where they look at the severity, the probability, and the exposure to those hazards. So the severity would be, you know, how bad is this hazard? How bad of an impact would it have? The probability is how likely would you be to encounter that hazard. So let's take lightning, for example. It's really bad to be hit by lightning, obviously, or ground current from lightning. But the probability of that really changes from day to day, depending on the, you know, circumstances that you find yourself in. And then exposure is the third piece of that. And, you know, there's a difference between passing over the top of a ridge quickly and being exposed to lightning as opposed to setting up your camp on top of that peak and being exposed for a much longer period of time. So analyzing the hazards is a step. Managing those hazards in a way that's aware of how similar programs manage them, maybe the standards that your particular activity or industry has set in place through accrediting programs or trainings and certifications. In Canada, you know, that might be the Canadian Mountain Guides Association or, you know, other accrediting bodies. And finally, informing people in the Analyze, Manage, Inform model, that's an important step to make sure people know what they're signing up for. If you want to achieve informed consent from your participants and especially parents of your minor students, then it's important to let them know about your organizational philosophy on risk, your risk tolerance, what the activities are going to be, what kinds of hazards they might be exposed to, so that there's no surprises. You know, lawsuits really arise when there's a mismatch between what people thought they were signing up for and what you're actually offering. So they also arise from how a program might respond and communicate if an incident does occur. So those are just some general ways that we can try to assess and manage and inform people about the hazards inherent to the activities we might be doing, whether it's hiking or rafting or backpacking or mountaineering or even, you know, just a nature walk or whatever it might be that you do in your camp or in your program.
And how could policies or protocols about tick awareness and first aid be incorporated into risk management for an organization?
Yeah, great. So, you know, with Lyme in particular, let's just use that as an example of your broader question. I was a risk management director for the Student Conservation Association here in the United States. It's a nationwide nonprofit conservation organization with programs in all 50 states. And we dealt with a lot of tick mitigation that encompassed training and equipment and medical protocols and policies and procedures at the ground level. So for Lyme in particular, you know, you really want to analyze and monitor the local tick population and the environment in which you are traveling or camping or working. You want to manage that hazard with basic protocols like bug repellent or bug repellent clothing, avoiding known tick habitat like grassy meadows, for example, and conducting routine tick checks is a pretty common and effective strategy to try to, you know, keep those, even if you have ticks on you, it's one thing to have them, it's another thing once they're embedded. And I know you're going to do our follow-up podcast with a wilderness medical expert who will probably go into these details a lot more than I will here. But basically just having those basic monitoring and tick avoidance, tick removal strategies, and knowing what symptoms to watch for, and then having a really good plan in place if someone does have any symptoms or have an embedded tick. So, and then once again, making sure that parents and participants know that they're potentially being exposed to ticks and in an area that has Lyme disease. That's, you know, communicating to them what you're going to be doing to manage those risks, again, so that there's no surprises.
Now, I know that you're in the States and I'm here in British Columbia, we're both on the West Coast, but I am curious, how exposed are school groups and organizations to litigation? And I know that, you know, that's a very different field in the States than Canada.
Yeah, great question. So I do not want to, I'm not an attorney, and so I'm definitely not an expert in Canadian law, and there are differences in how Canadian society and law works than in the U.S. But generally speaking, I would say that we are exposed. Anytime that we run outdoor programs, there's the possibility that things will happen, things will go wrong, and that there could be legal consequences as a result of that. But that there are a lot of things that organizations can do to help themselves conduct those programs and pursue all the benefits of outdoor education while mitigating their exposure to the legal consequences. And so, you know, having familiarity with the activities that you're doing and knowing how those activities are managed in the larger industry is a very baseline expectation. Hiring really competent, qualified, well-trained staff and continuing to train them and helping them grow in their expertise at managing these activities is a really good approach. Having written policies and procedures. This is one that I often see breakdowns in programs is maybe they've had staff that have been running these trips for decades and they know how to do it and they know how to do it well and safely, but they're running a quality program and they absolutely can't prove it because they have nothing written. They have no written protocols. They have nothing to point back to say this is how we do it at this organization. And so if something does go awry, they're more exposed as a result of that. So having, you know, written policies and procedures that you not only write, but that you follow and that you train to, is an effective approach. And, you know, another one is incident reporting and learning from things that do happen in the field, including near misses. You know, to me, near misses, which is like a close call where something almost happens, these are really chronically underreported things in the world in general, and certainly in the outdoor industry. You know, if we can do a better job of reporting and learning from our near misses, they're cheap lessons. There are no lawsuits. There are no injuries. You know, no one's going to the hospital about a near miss, but it's still a chance to, you know, listen to those weak signals that we might be getting and tuning more deeply into learning from our day-to-day experiences and it continuously improving. You know, I see organizations taking past success as a guarantee of future success. And they might have been making the same mistakes for 20 years and just getting away with it. You know, so I really think, you know, really listening to the people running the trips and creating the kind of environment where, you know, we can reflect back on how the trip went and what did we learn from it? What would we do differently next time? You know, risk management is not a product. It's a process. It's a process of continuous humility and learning and wanting to improve. So those are some of the thoughts I have about, you know, helping to set up your outdoor program so that you're reaping the beneficial risks from these experiences and not just exposing yourself to the legal liability.
Those are such great points that you make. I really love the idea of, you know, the reporting, having everything written down, and definitely writing up those near misses is so important to risk management. I don't want to get deep into this because neither of us are lawyers, but are you aware of any legal cases that pertain to Lyme disease and organizations? And what we can do is post a link to those cases in our episode notes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the U.S., there have been some really notable cases with tick-borne illness. One that really has garnered a lot of attention is not Lyme in particular, but it's a type of tick-borne encephalitis. They're very, very similar in some ways kind of case. This involves private school in the United States that did an overseas trip, and one of the participants came down a tick-borne illness that was that the school had not followed some of these particular strategies that I'm talking about. You know, knowing that that was a risk, having appropriate methods to manage that risk to the participants, communicating to the parents. So if you apply that analyze, manage, inform model to the Hotchkiss case, there were some things that could have gone better in that case. And it turned out to be quite a financially impactful lawsuit that occurred to the school and a very unfortunate medical result for the participants and just a very sad case in general. And you know, I would say that overprotecting kids and not letting them have outdoor experiences it has much more dire consequences than giving them a well-designed outdoor education opportunity. If you are running a camp or an outdoor program and you have not read Richard Lube's Last Child in the Woods book, you should. It beautifully outlines not only the downside of overprotecting kids, but it outlines the beneficial sociocognitive results and the growth and the physical health that can come from outdoor education. And so we can include a link to that in your show notes too, Sarah, but and some other pieces, you know, that I can share with you after we wrap up the call. But, you know, I think that there are... It's easy for in this in the social media age that we live in to focus on the high-profile incidents and let that color our understanding of all of the really positive things that happen every day with outdoor education. And how can we, you know, pursue the quality programs and not just run away from the negative aspects.
Oh, thank you so much for all of those practical ideas, as well as, you know, just the reminder to Richard Louv's important work. And we will certainly post that in our notes as well. And thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with us.
If I could just wrap up with one last thought.
Certainly.
You know, the main thing that I would really like people to take away from this is to keep learning. You know, don't take your past success as a guarantee of future success, and that you can continue to help your staff learn, and you can continue to learn about concepts like this by going to things like the Wilderness Risk Management Conference. This is an annual gathering where hundreds of people from around the world who care about outdoor risk management gather together. We had the conference in Banff some years ago, and it's usually in the United States, but we have a lot of Canadian folks who come down for the conference. This year's virtual, by the way, and it's next month. So, you know, there'd be a great opportunity to connect at that conference. And Rich Louv's book sparked an entire movement called the Children in Nature Network Movement, which has an annual conference. We were in Vancouver, BC, a few years ago. And that's a virtual conference this year as well. I would love to connect with anyone who has questions about any of this stuff. And you can find me on LinkedIn or other social media channels. And appreciate what you're doing, Sarah, with this podcast and helping people, you know, pursue the benefits of outdoor education while managing the undesired downside. There are no beneficial risks to contracting Lyme disease. And for anyone who has suffered through that, you know, I wish you the very best and hope that others can learn, you know, from podcasts like this to make the most of the outdoor opportunities and avoid the downside. So thanks again for having me.
Thank you, Steve, for that fabulous interview. I really learned so much about risk management, as well as the legal implications. That was really fascinating. It makes me think that maybe I should interview a lawyer on a future podcast. If you have ideas for new podcasts, please be sure to contact us and let us know. In the meantime, stay safe in the outdoors.